Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking about the debate over the nation's energy security, climate change, policies that influence those conversations, and the projects affected by them. Canadian firm Enbridge Energy has been expanding its pipeline network in the U.S. and Canada to meet customer demands. The energy firm is planning to replace its aging Line 3 that was installed in the late 60s. And Enbridge also wants to build a new pipeline to send more oil from the Bakken oil fields to its Superior terminal. The company's Sandpiper line would send up to 375,000 barrels per day from Clearbrook, Minnesota to Superior. In the future, Enbridge could send as much as 700,000 barrels per day along that route. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources held public hearings in Superior last week on its draft environmental study of those projects. Enbridge spokeswoman Shannon Gustafson was at those meetings. She spoke with us about the company's plans.
More than half of the people that spoke in the first hearing were against the project, and they cited varying numbers of reasons for that, whether it was land agreements to build the pipeline on their property, to environmental concerns, to tribal or cultural concerns. And is anything that you heard from people, was that new to you or catch you by surprise?
No, I don't think that there were any surprises in terms of the comments that people made. I think it's very good to see an assortment of people come out with and to be able to voice their concerns. That's the reason that these public meetings are held. This particular meeting, of course, belongs to the DNR, and they're hoping to get specific feedback about the draft EIS for Sandpiper and the Line 3 replacement project. And for the most part, I think comments were really held to the draft EIS, which I think is what the DNR was hoping for. And so that was good to see, whether the comments were in support or in opposition to the projects. It's a good opportunity to have conversation, and now I know that the DNR will take those comments received tonight, as well as some submitted in written format, and take those into consideration in making the final EIS.
Some of the things that were brought up were in relation to what's happening in Minnesota, and you've been more concerned with that part of the project because most of the pipeline is being built through the state of Minnesota, and regulatory delays have made it so that you're putting back that project until a couple of years, until 2019 instead of 2017. So what do you make of people who have said that we should take a regional approach to the permitting process, or, and, you know, having all the states work together, or all the tribal governments, local, state, federal, work together on permitting this line or these two lines?
Decisions are made on a state-by-state level. You know, decisions about pipeline permitting are made in North Dakota, in Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And so the suggestions that were made tonight in terms of opening that up and having a regional decision-making body for a particular pipeline project, if it crosses state lines, that's something that would need to be considered in the future. It's not something, you know, that I could imagine would be, you know, opened up right now. But for the time being, we're looking at Wisconsin in a particular place with their regulatory proceedings. They've opened up their draft environmental impact statement. We're very much in support of a rigorous environmental review in every state where we are proposing our pipelines. That's what we see in this document that the DNR has provided. We look to provide comments to that effect in written format by the deadline of March 25th, and expect that we'll have other people writing and speaking to that effect tonight too. But in Minnesota, for example, you mentioned, you know, that particular regulatory proceeding is on a different timeline. Someone had made the suggestion that this particular proceeding be held up, and it's not something that Wisconsin is necessarily going to wait for, and I don't think that we can afford to wait for it in terms of the Line 3 replacement project that we're looking to get construction underway for in Wisconsin. That is a critical project that we cannot afford to wait on. It's something that we would like to get underway as soon as possible. We are continuing to monitor and maintain that pipeline on a regular basis, and we'll continue to do that until we're constructing a full line replacement on that project.
Well, and specifically related to Line 3, what are your concerns with that project if it continues to be delayed or pushed back?
The Line 3 replacement project, that is an integrity and a maintenance project that is a critical project for Enbridge. The line itself, we've determined it has corrosion issues on it, and so what we have done is we've reduced the capacity of that pipeline voluntarily, so it's not moving as much oil as it originally did in its early days. And so in the meantime, we are continually monitoring it with our integrity program, which means maintenance digs, where we've identified concerns on the pipe. We'll dig up the pipe, manually look at it, and perform maintenance on the pipe or repair of the pipe if we need to. Well, that's called an integrity dig. Over the next 15 years in the life of Line 3, we could do as many as 4,000 integrity digs on that line. So that's a lot of disruption to landowners, to communities, to the environment that we really would like to avoid.
Would it be potentially 4,000 times between Canada and the U.S. or just on the U.S. side?
That's on the U.S. side.
And so there were other things that were mentioned too, though, as far as taking a long-range view on fossil fuels, and I know you transport them, you don't refine them, mm-hmm. but the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, was talking with the CBC Thursday saying that we don't need new pipelines and all governments should be, and those in the oil and gas sector should be moving towards lowering that carbon footprint. And so as someone who depends on the oil and gas sector to create these projects, are you concerned at all that, you know, these discussions about climate change, about reducing methane emissions, that may have an effect on your customers and therefore these projects?
You know, we absolutely agree that a need for diversification of energy is required, and we're looking to the future as a company as well in terms of diversifying our energy mix and looking to invest significantly in renewable energy in the near future and beyond. We've done that already in the last 5 years. We've invested $5 billion in green energy projects. We do feel confident, though, in supporting and continuing to push forward with the Sandpiper Pipeline Project and the Line 3 Replacement Project. There's still more than 1 million barrels of crude oil being produced in the Bakken every day. There still are pipelines coming out of Alberta are full right now. And so in the meantime, we're still relying on crude oil as the energy source that we rely on to fuel our daily lives. And so for now, pipelines, as many of us believe and agree, are the safest, most reliable way to transport that energy. And we're fully standing behind these projects and looking forward to moving them forward.
So as far then as discussions or the pledge between President Obama and Canada's Prime Minister Trudeau to reduce emissions, to have more restrictions on that regulatory framework and cut back, I think the Obama administration said they would like levels for methane cut back from 40 to 45% of 2012 levels by 2025. So those kind of discussions, you know, as far as governments and regulations, that doesn't concern you as far as how these projects move forward?
I don't think that those conversations are surprising. I think that the oil sands, for example, have already made significant reductions in their greenhouse gas emissions and are continuing to move forward on a regular basis in reducing their carbon footprint. And so, no, I think that we're continuing to see a need for the Line 3 Replacement Project for the reasons I stated earlier in terms of having full pipelines coming out of Alberta and needing to replace an aging pipeline because of the corrosion that we're seeing and the concerns we have for the safety and reliability of that pipeline. And then we're, again, still continuing to see 1 million barrels a day coming out of the Bakken, and we want to transport that product out of there as safely and reliably as we can.
And some of the conversation, too, tonight related to Line 3 and Sandpiper was that it's going to move more oil into Superior. And their reasoning, as far as environmental groups who oppose it, is that if you're going to send more oil into the Superior terminal, that you're going to have to send more oil out, and that would justify an expansion or another pipeline through the state of Wisconsin. You said that that's in planning for a twin pipeline to Line 61, but no final decision has been made. Has anything changed at all with that?
No, we still do not have a firm decision on adding an additional pipeline in Wisconsin, other than Sandpiper and Line 3 replacement project. To do so, we would need to have support of our customers, and we, you know, if we do make a decision to move forward with something like that, we would make sure to, you know, let authorities, landowners know, and legislators know, and then invite them to provide input on that project if we were to make a decision to move forward on that. In the meantime, moving forward with Sandpiper and Line 3, we would be moving that oil on the existing pipelines that we have, the existing infrastructure in the state.
So you're confident that Line 61 currently would be able to handle all the capacity that would be coming in through Superior from the expansion of Sandpiper and Line 3, or would it be going through other lines like Line 5?
I don't know that I can speak to the exact specifics of which pipelines the oil from Sandpiper and from Line 3 would be transported out of Superior on. Danielle, I'm not sure I can speak to that specifically, but I do know that from Superior, the oil coming in on Sandpiper and Line 3 would be transported on our existing infrastructure, either south on one of the three pipelines that we've got going south out of Superior, or on Line 5 going east.
And as far as this process then with Wisconsin and the permitting, for what is Enbridge's next step?
We'll have an opportunity for providing written statements, and that's what Enbridge will be doing, is providing our comments in a written format before the comment period ends on March 25th. And then the DNR will have an opportunity to take all the comments collected, written and orally, and take those into consideration before pulling together the final EIS. And it's my understanding they have about 20 days to do that, and then they'll be looking to make a decision on permits for Sandpiper and Line 3.
And so does that mean that you're still going to be focusing a lot of your energy in Minnesota, because Sandpiper, for example, is deemed incomplete? That application right now is incomplete in Wisconsin because of the holdup in Minnesota?
That's true. You know, actually, the DNR, I think, is after the final EIS is complete, they'll be looking at the Line 3 replacement project in terms of making decisions about a permit in Wisconsin. They'll be focusing on that versus Sandpiper while Minnesota is making decisions on the permits in Minnesota.
So if you received approval on the wetlands and waterway permit for Line 3, would you go ahead with that work if Sandpiper was still delayed through regulatory processes?
Yeah, we had hoped to begin construction in 2016 for the Line 3 replacement project, and right now it just appears that we need to wait for the regulatory approval, and so that's what we'll have to wait and see when regulatory approval comes from the Wisconsin DNR and from the Army Corps of Engineers, and then we'll be able to determine when we're able to move forward.
Anything else that you want to add from the company standpoint of why you're doing this project and why you feel it's important?
The most important thing that I can really stress tonight is the importance that we provide in people's daily lives with bringing the energy to the refineries from where it's produced to the refineries where we can use the products that we use every day, whether it's gas for our cars or whether it's petroleum products that are used in plastics that we use all the time. I don't know that people really realize how much petroleum is a part of their lives, and so what we do is provide a transportation mechanism for getting that petroleum from where it's produced to where it's refined, that people can use it in a safe and reliable manner.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk about these projects.
Thank you, Danielle. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
You've been listening to Shannon Gustafson, a spokeswoman with Enbridge Energy, and we've been talking about the company's plans to replace an older pipeline and build a new one to Superior. When we come back, we'll hear from groups on why they support or oppose those plans. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Canadian firm Enbridge Energy plans to replace an older pipeline and build a new one to Superior. Brian Hansen is CEO of the private economic development group APEX, which serves around 70 members in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota. He spoke with us about why his members support the company's pipeline projects.
First and foremost for me is energy independence. I think it's vital for not just our region, but for this country. And I don't say U.S. energy independence. I say North American energy independence, because I think that U.S. ties with Canada are extremely strong in this area and that we support one another. So beyond that, the benefits of the project, you know, they start with effectively priced liquid fuels, competitively priced fuels, so that our manufacturers, our suppliers, our shippers, our energy providers have access to something that can keep us cost competitive. Beyond that, then the actual projects themselves represent billions of dollars of investment in infrastructure in this community and in this region. It's extremely valuable infrastructure that the community doesn't have to pay for. The company is investing. And through that investment, not only are they putting billions of dollars into our economy, putting our construction workforce, some 3,000 people between these two projects directly involved in construction, and another estimated 2,600 people who will have jobs as a result of the supplier network, the hotels, the retail, the restaurants. These projects, that's 5,600 jobs supported by these two pipeline builds. And total investment just in Minnesota alone, number I have is $3.4 billion. I've heard that this is the largest construction project in the history of the state of Minnesota. It's certainly bigger than, you know, a Mall of America or huge mega stadiums that we're putting up down in the Twin Cities. And these construction jobs are held by people who live in both northeast Minnesota and northwest Wisconsin. The pipelines are vital to the long-term success of Calumet, a company or refinery that's located in Superior. Enbridge has over 700 people working in this combined area. What a lot of people don't understand is that these projects, the oil needs to move through our region in order for additional builds to happen in other parts of the country. And the builds that happen in other parts of the country are managed and administered out of the Twin Ports. These jobs are dependent on having future construction. And future construction is dependent on moving oil through our region. It's vitally important that we work together to figure out the best way and safest way to route these lines and move this oil through the region.
Well, what do you say to people who have spoken out against this project and that building the Sandpiper pipeline and making changes to Line 3 would provide jobs in the short term, but that it's not worth the long-term risk or the challenges that might be seen with fossil fuels and oil production?
Sure. I'm going to answer that on two levels. First of all, I'm going to say that, you know, we are not going to solve or even change our nation's thirst for fossil fuels with this project. In other words, we're not going to change anyone's buying habits if this project is stopped. Oil will just get there in other less efficient ways and come from other less politically stable and less attractive sources. So I think that pipelines present the best, most energy efficient, and safest way to move that oil to a market that's going to exist no matter what. So that's the big picture answer, Danielle. But then the more local answer is that a construction career is made up of multiple projects in a given year. And these projects, when put together, build a career. And so these aren't short-term jobs. These projects support a component of someone's career in construction. And then finally, as far as our region goes, there is extensive ongoing monitoring, maintenance, right-of-way maintenance, pump-pulse operation, energy-related jobs at the power utilities where they need to power the pump hoses that efficiently move this oil through our region. These aren't one-time jobs, one and done. This is an industry that supports hundreds of families, if not thousands, in our region, and it is absolutely an ongoing benefit in job creation. The other place where it's an ongoing benefit is the millions of dollars of tax revenue that Minnesota and Wisconsin receive as a direct result of these projects. Line 3 and Sandpiper together will contribute an additional $44 million a year that accrues benefits at the regional level and at the state level. So these projects have an annuity impact on our region over the long term. They're not one-time construction projects.
Well, and what about the members that you represent, you know, those businesses in northeastern Minnesota and Wisconsin? How do they benefit if these projects move forward?
Oh, several Apex members being part of our energy infrastructure here in the region absolutely benefit directly, whether it's the power suppliers at Great River and Minnesota Power, whether it's the folks who are involved in long-term maintenance and monitoring, the engineers at an LHB, BAR, those kinds of companies, Lake Superior Consulting, another company that is directly involved in providing services around the pipeline, including construction, but also maintenance and monitoring over the long term. They all certainly directly benefit as part of the energy infrastructure for our country.
You know, I know that there has been a lot of money that has been created by these projects and that Enbridge has invested those dollars into the communities that it serves. But then there are folks who look at Enbridge's record, more specifically in recent history with the 2010 Kalamazoo River spill, and weigh that against the benefit of building projects that might cause significant environmental damage. And what do you say to that?
Well, I say to that that it's fortunate that Enbridge is taking a forward look at things like Line 3, a needed line for our serving the U.S. and saying, boy, it's time to avoid any potential problem by upgrading and replacing this line now before a problem like what happened in 2010 could ever happen again in our state. I think that the companies, I don't even know how many nines go behind the 99.999% success rate of moving oil, but no spill is looked upon as something that's a small deal by the company or by the regulators in this state. And so the company's goal and the regulator's goal is to make sure that that's as close to a zero as it can possibly be. And by doing appropriate maintenance, doing this replacement, and building the lines in a safe fashion, I have a lot of experience with industrial companies, and Enbridge is among the top leaders in terms of a safety environment, a safety focus, and I believe that is why they're doing these projects, to make sure that oil can move safely. I'm sure that anyone in the industry would compare this method of moving oil to anything else, trucks, rail, and say, gee, the way to go in terms of safety and efficiency, energy efficiency in moving the energy is via pipeline. So while I understand that there is absolutely nothing that we can do in this world that's risk-free, including filling our own gas tanks at the pump, which most of us do on a weekly or biweekly basis, that's not completely without risk either to the environment. I feel like the safety record of this company overall is extremely attractive, and compared to the alternatives, the safety mechanisms are built in. It's time to get going on the pipeline.
And what's your fear then if this line is not built, or if Sandpiper is not built, or the maintenance is not done on Line 3?
Well, Line 3 will be a replacement. My fear ultimately there is that Enbridge would say this is reached its useful life and maintenance is too expensive, it's obsolete, and all of a sudden we don't have this needed resource flowing through our region, and we have impacted our energy sustainability here and our self-reliance as a country if that line is no longer able to operate. So that's a huge fear for me. And so by not doing that replacement, I think we run the risk of losing this resource, which impacts Calumet in Superior, Coke Refinery down in the Twin Cities, or Flint Hills, rather. So I think it has potentially huge impacts on the region and on our economy, both on a micro level here at our refineries and with the people who are working today to maintain and monitor those facilities, but then also in our country as we cut off an important lifeline for oil and instead turn to the Middle East and other places where instability and unpredictability are, in my view, much larger risks.
Well, what about recent reports, though, that kind of say the opposite, that we are seeing the most the largest stockpiles of oil because we have a glut of oil on the market right now?
Yeah, energy needs obviously fluctuate with the economy and with demand, and it is it's great to be in a position where we have surplus energy to meet our needs into the future and less reliance on outside sources. So I think that those are encouraging signs. It doesn't mean, however, that we can stop and rest on our laurels. I think we need to look at our needs moving forward and continue to fulfill them, and not by saying, well, if we need more, we can put it on rail. When we do that, we divert needed rail capacity from other products, and which impacts our energy industry in other ways, the electric utilities. It impacts our forest products industry was impacted in the last 5 years by rail diversions. So I just feel like we are we're finally actually learning our lesson with overseas fuel supplies and figuring out how to do it domestically or here in North America and meeting our needs. And that's positive. That's not a reason to put on the brakes. That's a reason to celebrate and say, boy, we're achieving that energy independence that we all wanted, and we should continue that.
Well, thanks so much for your time on this, Brian. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Daniel. I appreciate you giving me a call. It was good to talk with you.
Yeah, take care, Brian.
You too, Daniel.
You've been listening to Brian Hansen, CEO of the private economic development group Apex. We've been talking about Enbridge Energy's plans to replace an older pipeline and build a new one to Superior. Still to come, we'll hear from Elizabeth Ward with the Sierra Club and renewable energy advocate Christopher LaForge with Great Northern Solar. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We've been talking about Enbridge Energy's plans to replace an older pipeline and build a new one to Superior. Up next, we hear from Elizabeth Ward, Conservation Program Director with the John Muir Chapter of the Sierra Club. Ward spoke with us in Superior last week about the Wisconsin DNR's draft environmental study of Enbridge Energy's Line 3 and Sandpiper pipeline projects.
Looking at only these 14 miles of the pipeline outside of the whole system doesn't make a lot of sense, and that Wisconsin should work with Minnesota and look at the full system. But the biggest thing that I was glad was brought up that was not in the environmental impact statement was the National Academies of Sciences study, which talked about how different tar sands oil is from regular oil. And the study said basically you shouldn't even consider it oil. You should consider it a whole separate thing with separate impacts and separate needs for cleanup. And that was not addressed at all in the environmental impact study. So I was glad that was brought up.
How do you think regulators should gauge what's included in the environmental impact study? Because there is little that they can do for what's contained within these pipelines. Their job is to regulate the construction of them and where they're located, not what they're carrying, because that's under federal law.
So the point of the environmental impact statement is to look at the risks and benefits of a project, and then when making permitting decisions, basically look at whether or not the risks outweigh the benefits or the benefits outweigh the risks. And so it's a very clear risk that if the pipeline were to rupture, our natural resources would be contaminated, potentially permanently damaged, and at least for the, you know, near future of after a spill, you would have damage to both the economy but also the ecosystems. And so federal law looks at the safety of the pipelines, what's flowing through the pipelines, but it doesn't consider after a spill happens what impacts there are. There's no part of the process that looks at that. And so the DNR's job is then to look at all of the impacts, the cumulative impacts, and that includes the impacts of a spill.
What's your biggest concern then? Because, I mean, from what you said and what others have said, it sounds like people aren't really as concerned so much about Sandpiper or Line 3 as they are with what that project might mean for building another pipeline in Wisconsin right next to Line 61.
I'd say in Wisconsin, people aren't as concerned because it's only 14 miles, and the new pipeline that they would need south would be like 350 miles, so it impacts a lot more people directly. As well, that new pipeline would cross through a lot more waterways. Line 3 does cross through, you know, a couple rivers in Wisconsin, but it would cross through a lot more waterways, really impacting not only people who actually live along or near the line, but everybody who fishes in Wisconsin in any of these waterways, all of the people who get their water either directly or indirectly from these water sources. But outside of Wisconsin, a lot of people, especially like the tribes and people in northern Minnesota, are very concerned about Line 3 and Sandpiper. And the biggest difference between Enbridge and TransCanada, the Keystone Company, is that with Keystone, they asked for a permit for an entire pipeline that started in Canada and went down to the southern part of the United States. Enbridge is doing that exact same thing with these pipelines. They're just calling them different things as part of the project. So it seems like Line 61 is different or more concerning than the Alberta Clipper, that the new pipeline would be more concerning than Line 3 or Sandpiper. But in reality, it's just one big pipeline, and one big pipeline meant to take oil from the tar sands region in Canada, or in Sandpiper's case, from North Dakota, fracked oil, and bring it down south.
What do you say to Enbridge then, who says, you know, the oil that might be sent through Line 3 or Sandpiper, if these projects move forward, we have the capacity on our existing network to send that. We don't need to build any new pipelines.
I think that just physically can't be true. Even the environmental impact statement points out that Sandpiper could eventually become about double what they're talking about now. Line 3, what exists now, this new pipeline is going to be double what it is. So that's, you know, up to a million more barrels a day of oil into Wisconsin. There's no way that their current system can handle that, especially looking at the pipelines we do have. Line 61 is in the process of being expanded to 1.2 million barrels per day. There's no way you can get any more oil in that. And the other two pipelines are so old, it would be very dangerous to try to cram a million more barrels of oil per day in either of those two. The volume of oil, nothing makes sense economically for them other than a pipeline.
So what's your take then on the environmental impact study that the DNR has drafted? You would like them to just hold off on that and do it all over again once the regulatory process in Minnesota has decided what the fate of Sandpiper and Line 3 is?
Yeah, I mean, the Line 3 and Sandpiper are, you know, the project totally is over 1,000 miles. So having Wisconsin rush to permit 14 miles of that giant pipeline doesn't make any sense. So there's no reason to rush it. Minnesota is just starting. It could be 2 years. Enbridge announced the projects are delayed till 2019. You might as well take the time to pause and do a really good comprehensive job. So that means not only waiting to just make sure that the pipelines even are going to come to Wisconsin if they can't get permitted in Minnesota, or if they get routed a different way in Minnesota, we're not even going to have the 14 miles here in Wisconsin. Then if it's the case that they will be here in Wisconsin, we should really look at the entire system through Wisconsin and all the impacts, and that includes the downstream impacts.
Well, what about what Enbridge has said about Line 3 and that it's at reduced capacity right now because of integrity concerns with that line? What about delays or not doing maintenance on that line? What could that mean for the environment?
Well, and waiting to permit these new pipelines doesn't mean they should just keep running a pipeline if it's too dangerous to run. Or if Enbridge is admitting, as they have, that that pipeline is too dangerous to be running oil, then they should stop running oil through that pipeline. And delaying the process here in Wisconsin doesn't mean they have to keep pumping oil through that pipeline. And if the process in Minnesota is delayed anyway, at the end of the day, Wisconsin has way more oil than we need right now. The country does in general. Tar sands oil is so much more expensive than most oil anyway. We don't need this oil in Wisconsin. And so the risks are not worth the very few benefits. So if line three is too dangerous to run, they should stop running it. And they should do a full study to make sure it's worth the risks in order to run these new pipelines through Wisconsin. But the people who live here in Wisconsin, the people who enjoy the rivers, the people who drink the water, shouldn't be given a false choice of a dangerous pipeline or an enormous pipeline when in reality we don't need either.
You say we don't need that, but what about concerns that if you shut down that pipeline, that that oil is just going to move to another method of transportation like rail?
The reality is, economically, tar sands oil is already significantly more expensive than all of the other oil. And right now, you know, the oil market is flooded with cheap oil, and pipelines are the only way to even be competitive at this point because they're so cheap to transport oil. Our rail system, and there's been proposals to ship via barge, both of those are just too expensive, so they're not going to be a choice anyway, and they can't take the volume that they're talking about. And so the reality is it probably wouldn't get shipped. And that would, you know, probably be better anyway to keep it in the ground. But either way, it's, again, a false choice to say one or the other when we don't need the oil and it should stay where it is.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, talking with the CBC, said that we need to be moving towards a lower carbon footprint in the gas and oil sector. Projects like this, I mean, what do we do about the existing network of pipelines or existing refineries if we need to be reducing our carbon footprint, as the Secretary of State says that is a goal?
So the first thing we need to do is not exacerbate our carbon footprint, which new pipelines would do. You know, as James Hansen, the former NASA scientist, famously stated, if we pursue developing tar sands oil, it's game over for the climate. It's so carbon intensive to basically extract. You have to cut down the boreal forest, which is the largest carbon sink on the planet. We can't let developers develop all of the tar sands oil if we want to stop climate change in the first place. And then we certainly shouldn't create new pipeline infrastructure that will transport more oil. The existing pipeline system should definitely be looked at, and some of the worst and most dangerous pipelines, like, for example, Line 3, which Enbridge admits is what they call weeping oil, or Line 5 that goes through the Straits of Mackinac. It is worth looking at those and seeing whether or not the U.S. needs the oil and whether or not we should get rid of those, you know, maybe the worst of the worst projects or the most dangerous project, and then to move as fast as we can on the other side into the clean energy economy, which is really here around the country. We just need to embrace it here in Wisconsin.
Well, with the permitting process here in Wisconsin, what do you want to see from state regulators?
I think that the state regulators should pause and go back and really study the impacts of all of these pipelines in general, instead of looking kind of piecemeal, one small segment at a time. You know, Enbridge's pipeline system is like a machine, and it can only operate when all the moving parts are installed and working. And so there's no way Enbridge is going to install one part and not install the second part. It's like a conveyor belt. The DNR should take that same approach at looking at the whole system, the whole machine, and looking at the impacts of it.
Anything else that you would like to add about why you oppose these pipeline expansions?
Yeah, one thing that isn't in the DNR's purview, but I do think state regulators as a whole, whether it be the Public Service Commission or the legislature, should look at, is the fact that these pipelines are being proposed and being forced on the landowners who have the pipelines running through their lands. In June, the legislature expanded eminent domain, and now Enbridge can use eminent domain for their pipelines. And that's really in the Public Service Commission's kind of territory, really assessing whether or not that's fair or really fits with the law. The purpose of eminent domain is about public benefits, and basically it says that a project is so important for the public that it kind of usurps one person's property property rights in order to permit that project. So historically, it's used for schools, roads, things that serve everyone. These pipelines are really all about profits for Enbridge. And the idea that a foreign company can use eminent domain on a private Wisconsin citizen's land in order to make profits because they're going to export this oil should definitely be something that the Public Service Commission and legislature should look at.
But supporters of the project could argue because it's transporting oil to refineries and we all use oil in our vehicles and whatever else we need to heat our homes, that justifies using eminent domain.
And historically, you can make that case. If eminent domain was used in the first pipelines we had here, probably at that time, that's true. These pipelines, we're not going to use that oil. It's more than what we need, so it will likely be exported. And at the very least, it won't be used here in Wisconsin. And so we aren't seeing the public benefits of that.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Elizabeth Ward, Conservation Program Director with the John Muir Chapter of the Sierra Club. Good evening. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We've been talking about Enbridge Energy's plans to replace an older pipeline and build a new one to send more oil from the Bakken oil fields to Superior. Our next guest has been working in the renewable energy sector for almost three decades. Port Wing's Christopher LaForge is CEO of Great Northern Solar. He talks about his renewable energy company, the advancements with wind and solar, and the challenges with weaning the nation off of fossil fuels.
In that process, I've done a bunch of volunteering with groups like the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. I was on their board of directors for a number of years, and I still volunteer and teach with them. I volunteered with the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, of which I am a certified photovoltaic installation professional, and I've been on the board of directors with NABCEP for 11 years. I reside in northern Wisconsin on the south shore of Lake Superior. I occasionally do radio commentaries from this area, and I am a volunteer with the South Shore Area Northguard as their senior research analyst.
Okay. And, you know, the context of the conversation we're having today is coming at a time when U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has just said that there is no need for new pipelines coming from Canada through the U.S.-Canadian border. And also on the heels of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and President Obama saying that they're pledging to be a leader in lowering the carbon footprint. And I guess, you know, as someone who works in renewable energy, what do you see as the challenges in making that shift?
Right. The challenges are manyfold, often from the direction of people with vested interests in maintaining this antique fossil fuel enterprise. You know, fossil fuels have driven the Second Industrial Revolution for 150 years, causing all the pollution and destructive climate effects that we're now seeing. The players behind this, imagine being Exxon, this huge corporation that has all this value vested in it based on its ability to continue to exploit this antique resource, this old energy form. Those people are wanting to get in the way of the energy revolution, which Jeremy Rifkin refers to as the third industrial revolution, where we're going to bring energy costs down wildly because we're harvesting resources that the fuel is free. This should appeal to all my conservative friends out there. Free fuels should be taken advantage of. Wind and solar are there all the time. Once you've built the infrastructure, it's a very, very low-cost source that's going to do the same sort of thing that cell phones and intelligent phones, smartphones, did for the communications industry. This is called net zero marginal costs. After you've built the infrastructure, the actual cost of the next kilowatt hour is going to be very low. Even the president, last year, when confronted with a very good reporter, not unlike yourself, was forced to admit we have to keep 80% of these carbon fuels in the ground. The remaining resources have to stay in the ground by the majority. And that means we have a jobs program. We have an economic boon at our feet to pick up and run with. And I've been lucky enough to be on the forefront of training people to do it. We need a lot more training. Luckily, the government, through the Department of Energy, has developed some great programs I've been involved in helping the Solar Instructor Training Network, SITN.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, though, as far as training. And you mentioned one thing as far as leaving that oil in the ground. And we're seeing that happen right now because of the glut of oil on the market, where there are less rigs being put in the Bakken region, and companies like Whiting Petroleum are scaling back on capital investments for oil production there because oil prices are less than $40 a barrel. And even companies like Enbridge are saying that they're embracing renewable energy, but we have still yet to see solar, wind, hydroelectric forms of energy become more prevalent. I think people are more welcoming to it, but there's still, I think, the sense of the upfront investment is more costly than it would be to maintain the status quo.
Yeah, it's a mistaken perception, but it's being overwhelmed by certain facts. The cost of solar has come down so dramatically that now we're getting to parity with utility electrical costs in more than half the United States. It costs the same or less than buying grid-tied electricity. All these companies understand this. There is this huge, it's just like cigarettes in a major way, because, you know, when the studies about the problems with cigarettes started to come out, like it's killing people with lung cancer, first there was this huge denial campaign funded by the tobacco industry. That's the stage we're at. Follow the lead of the wildly intelligent and industrialized nation of Germany. Germany's moving towards being 80% renewable energy, both in their grid and their transportation by 2050. That's the country that's going to kill us economically if we don't catch up. Because, as Jeremy Rifkin points out, a good economist from Wharton, when you're transitioning from one economy to another, from one energy source to another, the companies that put the right foot into the third industrial revolution while they're still making money from the second are the ones that are going to be able to pick that foot up out of the second industrial revolution and step firmly into the third industrial revolution and make a killing. And that's what companies like Siemens and Schneider, these multinationals that are on board already, are just, and all these other companies have their plans. They won't talk about them because they still want to make a bunch of money out of the oil. But what we need is firm mandates from the people through their representative government to hasten this process.
Well, I just want to touch on what you're saying in making, you know, more strict regulations to encourage renewable energy. And one thing that Enbridge's CEO has said is that we've put $5 billion into solar and wind projects. These projects take time to develop. The transition is not going to happen overnight. And I ask about that because we have over 800 people who are employed or contracted by Enbridge in the Duluth Superior area. And, you know, how do we make these decisions or balance this transition? Because that's a huge part of the regional economy. And how do you transition all of that in a regulatory framework?
Yeah, and the short word is slowly and with patience on all players being at the table, and many of us have been left out of the table because the oil companies dominate, the pipeline companies dominate. Let's remember that Enbridge is a foreign corporation making money on our turf. And when they blew open their pipeline in Kalamazoo, they created a multi-billion-dollar disaster that's going to permanently alter that environment. They're bringing us more and more dangerous ways for them to make money. Why do you think that the Saudi Arabians are dumping all their oil on the market at such a low rate? Well, they can profit down to about $18 a barrel. They can still make money. They have very easy oil. If you're not making $40 a barrel, you're not making anything. You're not even breaking even on Bakken oil. If you're not making $60 a barrel, you're not breaking even on tar sands oil. Why are the Saudis dumping? Maybe they smell something that's obvious. The externalities of the carbon system are being brought home. We are going to have a carbon tax. The minute we get a good, solid carbon cost put onto industries, you'll have a lot of revenue to fund a transition. And you will discourage the bads. Taxes should be used to discourage the bads and encourage the goods. Let's tax and redistribute that revenue in ways that help real people on Main Street. And part of that is going to be, hiring me. Hey, it's a job for LaForge to train all these people. We're ready at the tech level. At tech colleges across the state of Wisconsin and Minnesota, we have trained teachers ready to train people to install solar now. What's lacking is a few important nudges, and the carbon tax is inevitable. The question is, how soon will the politicians be forced to do this by a political body known as the people they represent?
Well, and that's what I was just going to ask you, is how ready do you think the American people are? Because we've seen efforts to curb carbon emissions through purchasing of tax credits if people are going to, or companies are going to pollute at the same level. But really all of that has done is encourage companies to buy more credits so that they can continue the same level of operation. So what is needed then that would cause that kind of shift in public opinion and perception and influence policymakers and corporations?
Yeah, a cap and trade is a loser, but at least it was a try. So I'm with you on that fact that the current tries haven't done well. What's needed? My friend Jason Edens, who's with REAL in northern Minnesota, a wonderful renewable energy company, says, there's no one silver bullet. We need the golden buckshot. So we need a lot of things. But underneath it all is there's got to be a way to discourage fossil use and encourage renewable use that hits the pocketbook. And the way that we don't harm lower income and poor people in this, because they got to buy gasoline too while the transition happens, is this carbon tax with a credit. And there's a very good plans in the Congress of the United States and the Senate on how to do this. It's not complicated. You end up making sure that part of the revenue goes to people that would otherwise be wildly harmed by the increased costs that are going to be seen at the gas pump. It's very simple, very straightforward, and very progressive. Unfortunately, we are in a regressive time politically. That has to change. How do we change that? I don't know. I'd pick a candidate that's talking about climate change, not naming any names. We need to embrace our neighbors that are currently – this is what I did at testifying at the Minnesota sandpiper hearings. Sandpipers are one of the species that will be more endangered by that pipeline. Isn't that irony? And I embraced those people, and I said, don't worry. You're going to be able to have your jobs, and the new people for Enbridge will transition to the right energy jobs. And you know this is happening because you already own wind turbines that are big in Canada. You're just going to do it here. We need to move away from the fossil industries that are simply making a killing and make a good living for all of us and the community and the environment, because Mother Nature bats last, and she's hitting us hard right now.
Hey, thanks so much for your time. Christopher LaForge, CEO of Great Northern Solar.
That's right.
All right. We appreciate your time and hope to have you back again.
Thank you. I appreciate your work. Take care.
Thanks to all of our guests. That's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading. We hope to have you back with us next week. Until then, have a great rest of your week.